Everyone, and welcome to this week's Scouting the League. We are nearly to April, which means every Tom, Dick, and Harry out there has a mock draft. Some are more accurate than others. Some are simply out there for clickbait and interaction. Either way, find your sources, trust them, listen to them. Perhaps that is myself or Neil or one of our guests. We'll see if our guest today has any mock drafts out there. We don't do anything for shock value. We just want to give you the truth. But today is not about the draft. It's about the transfer portal, NIL, and the changing landscape that is college football. Before we jump into that, though, let me remind you, like, subscribe, share this podcast wherever you are listening. Give us a five-star review, share with a friend, jump on Twitter, and drop us some comments. As always, my co-host from Inside the League, Neil Stratton. You can find him at his website, insidetheleague.com, or you can find him on Twitter at Inside the League. If you are ever looking for additional information, scouting, training, really anything in the realm of football, make sure you check out his website. That is insidetheleague.com. I, of course, am Roderick David, was part of six drafts with the Atlanta Falcons, have seen the process inside and out, been into schools, been in the draft room. One of the hardest times for me of the year, because people who have little to no idea what's going on out there in the front offices have the loudest voices, it seems. So somehow they get people to follow them. So if you want to follow me, I'm at RightStepADV, or you can head over to RSA Football. Today's guest, like we said, comes NIL college personnel on the college side with the spring portal about to open up here. It's a couple weeks away. Great time to talk about the decisions guys are making. Dave Shoemate. Welcome to the program, Dave. You've been at Miami, Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M, Kansas, and Central Florida. That's a lot of really good football. Welcome to the podcast. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. What's up, guys? Appreciate y'all having me on. You know, I listen to y'all's stuff. Y'all do a great job. Again, y'all are more. Does your guest today have a mock draft? I do not have a mock draft. But again, I appreciate y'all's show. Appreciate y'all having me on. Yeah, my expertise. So I was in college football for 9 years, started off as a student assistant in Alabama, then worked at Miami, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M, Kansas, and then UCF. Been out a year and a half, 2 years now. Just kind of took the time to get personal from a personal life side of things. Promised my wife we'd get her back to the Southeast. So we just had some personal decisions to make. So that's why I got out. It was nothing against college football or anything like that. But yeah, crazy world we live in now. So I dealt with the portal for about 2 years, like the true portal is now. I believe we all started 18, 19, I think. But that was before the old tampering pay for play stuff started. But no, really probably 2 years I worked in it. Been out now two full seasons. Got out in April 2022. Now I do an SEC podcast, Mock 10 Sports. And I'm a contributor as well on the SEC Unfiltered platform. It does all things SEC too, really covering football, basketball, and baseball. And then I'm over sales right now at QuickU, a recruiting service database that we're a database. We do film cutups we really sell to the colleges and universities. So we got about half the SEC in there, Georgia, Oklahoma, LSU, Auburn, stuff, schools like that we have right there. But so that's what I'm doing right now after 9 years. In college athletics.
That's good. The college, we've had some guests on here who talked about the schedule of college athletics. Obviously, you know, controlling where you live is one of those things that, you know, can be difficult to do, but again, making the decision. The nice thing is finding something to do where you can still be involved. Again, on the consulting side with what I do, with what Neil does, again, being arm's length, but still, again, your day job is talking to a lot of the people that you've been connected with over the years. So it's all really fun.
No, absolutely.
Dave, that's a pretty impressive resume, buddy. That's a lot of schools that do a lot of that are pretty mega horsepower, high bandwidth kind of schools. So you've been in a lot of different, you've had a lot of opportunities. You've seen a lot of different things. Let's start you off. You know, one of the most outspoken people with regard to all this stuff that's going on right now in college football that's become so controversial is Nick Saban. He's really been pretty outspoken about, you know, I think he's admitted that he would probably be still in it if it weren't for the conditions we have right now. He's talked a lot about what he sees as negative. Based on, you know, generally speaking, do you align with what he said, or do you feel like he's been a little off base with his kind of general statements about this, where we are in college football?
I mean, I think sometimes in society, getting off a little bit, we forget that two things can be true at once. I mean, I think for him, you see some people like attack him, like, oh, him sitting here saying this while him and his wife live in these three different mansions all over the country. It's like, I don't think back in like 1972, whenever Nick Saban got his first, I think that was his first job, was in 1972, somewhere around that time, he didn't get in it for money, because as you guys know, the money wasn't big then. So I think from his standpoint, he got a lot of value, joy, whatever adjective you want to use, in the development process. I think he literally liked to see, just like most of us, I forget what podcast I was listening to yesterday, and somebody was talking about the potential of the portal, like if these kids can transfer year to year, really hurting the fans at a school, like maybe like Arkansas, South Carolina, where it's like, well, we probably aren't ever going to win the whole thing. Got to go spend my money a little bit elsewhere because I'm not familiar with these guys. I didn't see Johnny Smith. I remember Matt Jones when he was the quarterback at Arkansas develop all the way through. Not me personally, just like you as a fan from Arkansas. I don't think you get to see that as much anymore. And they're not really, these fans don't get to see the same guys in a jersey. And they're like, whether right, wrong, or different, I don't think kids always cared about the school as much as the fan liked to, but us as fans, at times you like to believe that Cam Newton loved Auburn as much as that the biggest Auburn fan. And the guy likes to believe that. He probably didn't, but you like to believe that. Like, to Nick Saban's point, though, he liked, just like those fans, to see those guys develop as players throughout the year, and that kind of gave him some gratitude and stuff like that. So I think from his perspective, yeah, he's kind of like, man, us old school guys, we kind of like to get in it. Like, I like to see our guys develop, not only in the field, but as people. That's gone, and that's kind of what my joy was. Because I think it really hurt that Rose Bowl loss hurt them, and I think he was kind of taken back how his team, from what he's saying. It's funny, he's a lot more – it seemed like he was pretty complimentary to that team throughout the season. But now more – it seems like he was a little bit disappointed how, like, hey, man, guys, we just lost in the semifinals, and the first conversations I'm having with some of you guys is, y'all want – like, what can I do for y'all? We're not going to go with an edge in the offseason, have it all in the TVs and the weight room, us losing to Michigan. We're going to go finish it next time. I think he was kind of like, man, that loss still pisses me off. And I got guys asking about money. But from the other side of things, I mean, got to be willing to change, adapt, or die. I mean, I always like what Lane Kiffin says. Lane Kiffin always says it's a terrible system, but he's like, I mean, I got to go play the game or we're going to get run over here. So I think both things can be true at once. I'm really saying, I get where Nick Saban's coming from. Again, I'm not usually a fence rider. I just feel like both things can be true here. And I feel like too many people are kind of on their high horse a little bit. Like, look at this guy and his three mansions. And he's the one commenting that he didn't like the way the kids are. Cause I guess you'd say the rabbit now has the gun. The athletes have a lot of the leverage now. I don't think that's it for him. I just think the joy of what him and his wife got out of it, seeing these young men grow, it just wasn't there for him. Cause how long is Nick Saban really ever checked his bank account? It's not about money. That, I mean, how long has it been about without, how long is it, I should say, how long has it not been about money for that guy? I mean, that guy's made so much money here the last two decades. That stuff just kind of kills me. It is what it is. But to answer your question, I hope that answered your question there.
Yeah.
No, it does.
Kind of roundabout way.
Now, Dave, I think the crux of what Saban has been saying, and I think you've alluded to it, is we're almost in a purely transactional state in college football. All right, you've been out for better part of 2 years. Were you starting to see that as well when you got out, and was it a contributing factor in why you got out?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you, O'Neal. I hated the. I mean, they dumbed down that the photo shoots are now only official business, as y'all probably know. But dude, I hated that stuff, and that's what it kind of turned into, the on campus stuff, because we were a little shorthanded on staff at UCF, and that was the one always stuck with me, because we were in that June. It'd been dead for about a year. Been dead for about a year. So that whole June, you're trying to fit a whole 365-day calendar into 1 month with all these visits. And dude, you get on the phone with these kids, and the coaches would get on the phone, and the only thing they cared about was the photo shoot, getting in the different jerseys and stuff like that. And I remember we'd always say, like, dude, if they banned photo shoots, how many of these kids would come on campus, like, after once or twice? Like, because I always felt like, I'm saying we, maybe it's college football, and again, there were some schools I worked at that did it well, but I feel like we left some meat on the bone a little bit from a developmental standpoint of like, hey, we're not getting this kid on the board enough. Like, does this kid really love football? We're really just kind of playing video games. And again, I know it's not like the NFL. We're having to recruit these kids. Like, it's different. I get it. But some of that always kind of bothered me, that some of it's probably my fault too, like, that we never really dug deep enough to really feel like, hey, this guy got some, is he a football intelligent guy? Does he want to learn? Is he craving new information every day to get better? Or is this guy just coming up here to be entertained, bringing up his buddies, him and him to take pictures? That's kind of how I felt it was at the end. A lot of just, hey, let's get him on campus. Let's do the dog and pony show. Let's get all the lights. Let's change our photo shoot backdrop. I mean, I saw what Florida did. Why aren't we doing that? It's like, God, man, we're getting caught up in the wrong stuff here, man. Like, and it was usually nine times out of 10. I still laugh about it with all of it. The kids who were the biggest pain in the tails when it came to that ended up never really doing much.
Dave, I mean, in your defense, do you have enough leverage to be able to do those kind of things when a kid comes in on a visit? I mean, they want to be entertained, right? They want to be shown a great time and they want to leave thinking, oh my gosh, I got to go there because it's going to be awesome. I mean, is there any way you could have turned the ship around?
I mean, they took all the photo shoot stuff out now, but now a little bit since I've been out, it's adjusted more where now it's just straight, I think, conversation at a lot of these bigger schools. Like, hey, what's the deal? How much can I make? What do your current players make? Show me some of their stuff. And then also, I think it's about it. I still say that. It's still about getting to the NFL where I feel like, 10, 15 years ago, it was really – but y'all add into this too. It was about, I mean, it's always been how can you get me to the NFL? But I also think probably a little bit, I don't know, like facilities was more of an arms race then. Now it's just, give me the NFL. How much money can I make? Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, I'm going to go try to find that elsewhere. Like the loyalty to the school isn't really there anymore.
Well, that's, I mean, you said the term transactional, which I think, again, it becomes very much transactional. I think that goes back to Nick Saban too. I mean, you the players that Nick Saban has had come through Alabama alone in the last 10 or 15 years, they will still call him. Again, I remember Julio Jones. That was one of the first calls Julio ever made from the Falcons facility if he had a question, if he had something in life, not football wise, but in life. And again, that type of, again, that's not a transactional relationship. And again, all the guys all down the list, those weren't transactional relationships. And again, now you get to the point with recruiting, and now you throw the NIL money, which we haven't even gotten into. That's just a whole nother of transactional. So again, it's Nick, again, in Nick's case, get to know guys, but again, knowing that, you know, these guys don't really care. Again, you used to pick a school for a school. Maybe you picked a head coach. Again, there was a time where maybe guys chose a major or chose an academic institution. Again, we're well past those days. But again, it's all goes into it now, where, again, most of these football players, a lot of these football players, again, it's what's the number going to say? And again, forget everything else. What's the glitz? What's the glamour? Forget the substance. Forget what this is going to do for me in my life. It is, becomes, a transactional thing, like you said. So, again, for Nick, I have to imagine that's part of it. So, do you think, again, with some of these guys, players are maybe having more options, again, with transfer portal, with NIL money, hopping around, giving themselves the opportunity, is it, there's always going to be outliers, guys that have themselves and put themselves in good situations, but is it more often not than not ending up in a bad situation or a less good situation?
Yeah, it'd be funny to run the numbers on that. I mean, off the top of your head, you would feel like if a group of five kid, I feel like transfers up, I feel like that usually leads to maybe a little bit more success, because I'm not saying all of them. I'm not trying to universally make a statement here, but I feel like those guys kind of are a little more hungry coming up. I feel like you have some guys, maybe I've always kind of thought like this, man, if you can't, again, and there's exceptions, like how many guys really left Alabama and ended up being that much, being better at their other school? Maybe a hand. I mean, Alvin Kamara is a big exception. He was there for a year. But over that, a lot of those guys, they couldn't really cut it in that program. I don't know really they went somewhere else. And there was a kid at Georgia. I'm not going to say his name, but if you went and did the research and by the name of the schools I'm listening, there's an offensive lineman at Georgia. Couldn't do it. Couldn't stop smoking. Went to his next school, group of five. Same thing. Missed meetings. Those guys have talent. But usually, if they're probably transferring down, the Power Five, the big SEC school guys, are probably transferring down. Probably there's something off the field, I would assume, is why this kid. Maybe it's inability to learn defense. Can't lock in on that. But transferring up, I would assume, would have more success overall. Just because I feel like that would probably, again, not all of them, but would translate into that kid maybe just coming in, being a little bit more hungry, having an edge to prove he can compete at that level.
Do you think, Dave, that once a kid has gone to an Alabama or a Georgia, or an Ohio State. When he goes to his G5 school, does he feel like he's already proven what he needs to prove? I mean, does he feel, hey, listen, my pedigree is I started off at this other school. Does he go to the other school and whether or not he had success, he's already kind of proven to himself everything he wants to prove?
Yeah, I could see that slight edge just coming off. Yeah, if you mean you're dropping all the way to a group of five, you're like, man, I've been at the pinnacle. Like, we used to get meals all the time. It's like, well, my meals got cut off. I don't get near as much gear as if I was at Georgia. And every time I went to my locker room, we had a new hoodie, sweatshirt, jacket, whatever it is, shirt. But now I go to Middle Tennessee State and I'm not getting near as much, or like I don't have near the cleat options that I had at Georgia, stuff like that. So I could see that being a major level or a major issue from that standpoint. So, you know, I'm with you. I could see a lot of these kids. I mean, again, you really don't see a ton of kids who drop down that far really go have success at that level. Again, not saying everybody, but yeah. I was even trying to think, because UCF, we had a couple. I mean, you had a couple. I forget what the kid's name. He got drafted the year. We weren't there with him. But after the kid went to Alabama and played safety for UCF, he ended up getting drafted. I mean, you had a couple kids who would end up being – you'd be like, oh, all right. He was kind of a – or the running back at Cincinnati that you went to the playoffs with, the kid that transferred from Alabama. I forget what his name was. He had some success there. Went down a little bit, but again, I thought you got to be careful. I thought Luke Fickell and him at Cincinnati and Wisconsin do a good job of kind of filtering that, getting the right kids into their program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Generally speaking, Dave, in your opinion, what's the better outcome for schools? Would it be a salary cap where everybody can only kind of spend the same amount of money? Or would it be if they remove the immediate eligibility for transfers and you had to go back to sitting out a year before you could actually play?
I don't think it'll go this route because I think it's unrealistic. But I think the transfer, like if you made everybody go back to the old school way, if you had to sit out a year no matter what, if you transferred, it's like, hey, man, if you don't like your situation that much and you want to sit out a year, lose a year of eligibility, then so be it. That would cut out all this pay for play, stuff like that. But again, no one's going to do that because they have lawsuits on their hands. So the salary cap, the next one, I would say would be the more realistic option. Best option in a perfect world is, yeah, let's go control the transfer portal. Because that's what I really think it is, more so than NIL. And it's just, I'm sure with y'all too, nobody's against the true meaning of NIL. Right. Like if Neil Stratton is the big time quarterback at Oklahoma and he goes, has his name on a burger and he gets a percentage of the hamburger it's sold with his name on it, or the Bryce Young and Caleb Williams, I don't think anybody cares that they get money from the Dr. Pepper stuff because they've earned it. That's a true, they're benefiting off the name, image, likeness. So they should be rewarded. I mean, unless you're totally against capitalism, I guess you would hate that. But it's pay for play. I mean, it's pay for play. I mean, all three of us know that. But I just think the transfer portal thing legally wouldn't happen. But I think that would knock 90% of this stuff out, just because I don't think a lot of these kids would be willing to sit out a year. But now I think the realistic would be if you'd have to separate, I think, the have and have nots, because so many of these schools would be so different on the salary cap. And again, y'all are more familiar with the NFL since y'all dealt with that more internally than I would. But I think it almost have to be from a contract standpoint, probably putting ceilings on how much certain positions would make. But again, you'd have to have all those schools/owners like they do in the NFL all be in an agreement with that. So I think it was going to have to take some separating first of the have and have nots to get on that salary cap and get these guys in some kind of contract locked in 2 or 3 deal, or there's a big penalty if you transfer. But again, I'm sure it's probably sooner than we even realize that separation's happening, especially with the SEC, Big Ten. So I think that would have to happen first, and then we go the salary cap way.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. I wish they do the transfer portal thing. I just don't think that's a lawsuit waiting to happen for anybody.
So you take a step back from there. Again, it's one thing for Bryce Young, and this year it's going to be Quinn Ewers, guys that have established themselves that are legit players getting paid big bucks. Take it back a step to the guys, you know, the Julian Sayans, the Tennessee quarterback, where they've never played a college snap. They're a big-time recruit. These guys are getting paid. Again, Matt Rhule said the number was 1 to 1.5 from the transfer portal. I'm sure it's the same for those big-time recruits. Is it, again, you go in the way of the rookie wage scale where, hey, a incoming freshman can only make X amount of money. He's going to come in here and have to prove it. Does that help with, again, all the stuff we talked about with, hey, now you have to choose the right school. You need to choose the right situation, not just choose that biggest paycheck to step into.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you, too. I mean, that would be awesome. I think that's something they would probably – I could see incorporating once they separate. Once I think once you go like the true big team, get what the top 57, 60 teams in the country, when I kind of go get into that league, I'm with you. I think they all get on the same page. I think that'd be a fantastic rule. And I think it'd be, I think you'd see stuff similar to that.
Dave, do you think you, me, and Neil should just head up whatever committee that they're going to put in charge of everything and
put
we can just knock it out?
Put it on us, man. Hey, we're figuring things out right now as we speak, and we're only how many? I don't have a countdown on the minutes here. Oh, we've been on for 21 minutes if we're going by what time we got on.
We're doing good.
I know. Think of all the answers we already provided in just 21 minutes. So by the time this hour is up, we'll probably maybe start to actually
saving
tackle
the, we're saving
beats.
The sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's wasting our efforts on college football. Quarterbacks obviously are going to be the ones that kind of determine the market, and they're always most in demand. After quarterbacks, in your experience, what position was the second biggest position in demand, generally speaking?
And it'd have to be defensive tackle, offensive tackle.
Really?
But again, I don't think there's many – I'd say D linemen in general, probably throw edge guys in there too. But there's not many, as y'all know, there's not many – either the Walter Nolan kid who left A&M and did Ole Miss now. A lot of those freak shows in the interior aren't leaving their current schools because, again, those current schools are like, we got to retain our big defensive linemen. That's why, like, a little off topic here, I'm not that sold on LSU going into 2024 because they only have two – right now they only have two scholarship defensive tackles. Like, they're going to be really thin, and I don't think you fix that through a spring portal window, especially at that position, because if they're worth the – you know what? Those schools are not dumb. They're like, hey, we're going to do whatever we can. I just think Walter Nolan was asking too much for A&M, and I think they kind of just let him walk. And I mean, they do have some decent depth there, some unproven, but they have some skilled guys, or I should say some skilled guys on the interior of their defensive line. So I would say defensive line, edge rushers, definitely, and then offensive tackle. Y'all know everybody reaches on those at all levels. I mean, the NFL, everybody's looking for offensive linemen. I remember me and Siski be sitting there talking, and there were some guys – and we were watching some NFL playoff game, I think, at the convention. And he's like, dude, that kid starts in the – he's like, that kid starts – I forget for what team or for what kid, I'll be honest with you. But he's like, dude, I remember that kid from the 17-18 class. He's like, I thought he was – he's like, I didn't think he was worth a damn. And he's like – and then you go look at the kid's body. He's like, this kid's been playing in the NFL for 7 or 8 years. So it's like, man, it's crazy how funny some of these evals you go on. And you're like, man, I didn't really think that kid was that good out of high school. And he ended up going to, just hypothetically, like Penn State. And you're like – man, he started 3 years at Penn State. Never would have guessed that. Kids got drafted fourth, fifth round, just hung around the league, just been on two or three teams. Like, man, it's amazing that, I mean, you get some size, athleticism, some traits you can't teach, that you'll hang around the NFL for a while.
Do you think that the reason those kind of kids are hanging around has to do with NFL development, or is it purely that, the numbers and the scarcity is such that they're going to always get chance after chance after chance because there's only so many guys like that?
I think it's what you just said. I just think you can't teach that size. I think somebody always is going to be like, I think I can figure him out. Because every offensive line coach I was around all kind of had different – it's always funny in the evaluation process, every guy kind of had their own different thing they looked for. You know, talk to the wide receiver coach, I want some guys that can run. Like, that was always a pretty universal thing for them. I get it. But offensive linemen were always looking, hey, can he get his second foot in the ground? Does he come out of his hips? Do I like his first step? Does he finish? Stuff like that. I mean, it all comes together, but they all initially, at least every one of them I was around, always kind of had one big thing that they were like a non-negotiable. They didn't have that. It's like, damn, coach, everybody else likes this. I mean, he's pretty good. I don't know why you don't like him. Or like, man, why does he like this guy? It's like, because he did that one thing well that he liked. So I think that's kind of, I think all the offensive line coaches kind of think like, oh, if they can't fix him, I have a little bit of a pride competitive thing. And also, again, I mean, you can't teach the size stuff. So people are kind of like, hey, man, if we're looking for that eighth, ninth lineman, some guy just to provide some depth, I mean, I think we can make this guy serviceable now.
Yeah, that goes from both the college and the NFL side too,
without
question.
Agents
I talk to all the time, everybody wants to sign that developmental, even day three offensive tackle because they know that guy. Like, at minimum, he's going to be on the practice squad for 3 or 4 years, getting chance after chance after chance. Because, like you said, you can't teach, again, 6'5", 33-plus arm length, can move a little bit. Some of those guys, that's all they have to do is move a little bit. But, again, they're big. They're 3'10", 3'15". Again, not a lot of human beings just walking around that size that can move, again, are healthy. They're generally good people. Again, those guys are going to get a lot of chances.
I've also heard, and maybe – y'all may be able to answer this better, that offensive line coaches, there's something in their DNA. They tend to be a little more loyal. and they're always going to go to bat for their guys, and they like to have the same guys in the room all the time. And for that reason, maybe we can attribute that longevity to that as well. I don't know. I've never had hands on with that, but I've always heard that that was the case. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think those guys, it's pretty, I feel like those offensive linemen kind of get, because it's kind of similar personalities. I'm sure the offensive line coach played offensive line. They're kind of like a lot of offensive line coaches are kind of smart asses. They got a real dry sense of humor. Some of them have a great sense of humor. I always liked the offensive line coaches I worked with, but like very dry, like you said, I think it's a good word to use, Neil. Very loyal to their group, loyal to any, like their GM. Like offensive line coaches, I felt like were always the guys who took care of their support staff member the best with their summer camp check. Like they would, every offensive line coach I worked with gave their entire summer camp check to their GA or analyst.
Really?
Other positions didn't happen like that. And so I think you used a great word from a loyalty standpoint. Those, for whatever reason, I don't know, it's almost like they have a military mindset of like, I know it sounds corny, cliche, like all for one for all kind of deal, three musketeers deal. Like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, we got a group, there's five of us. We're only as good as our weakest link here, guys. Like we can't, one of us just can't be good here. So they all kind of need each other, that cohesiveness. So I think that's kind of what the loyalty find a gas from what it is.
Yeah, I think, again, you hit on it at the end. That is the one unit where it's a unit, right? Again, you can have a wide receiver group with all sorts of personalities. You can have a running back and group. You can have linebackers.
Yeah, in the wide receivers, you have the guys sitting there like, oh, he's getting more catches than me. Like, it's not like that on the offensive line.
No, that group, the fit, again, you talk with that group. Again, the fit matters. Again, you can have really good players, but again, that personality fit matters in that room. And again, it takes on, more often than not, that room takes on the personality of that coach, which again, all plays into it.
All right. So, as you know, Dave, as you well know, the portal moves at the speed of light. I mean, you can't afford to be reactive. You've got to be proactive. When you and you're in the different schools you worked at, when y'all were kind of trying to, okay, here's who we think is going to come, here's kind of the players that we think are probably going to the portal, how accurate were you, generally speaking? I mean, did you find yourself having a lot of success in knowing who's going to jump, or were you like, oh my gosh, I can't believe these people that did, and I can't believe the ones that didn't come out?
Yeah, it was always funny because I was dealing with the COVID year stuff. Remember that? It's almost about done, all these COVID years. I think I've noticed it in college basketball now. With the
finally.
It's like, yeah, no doubt. It's like, how did some of these guys, like the kid at Trey, I know it's off topic, literally the kid from transferred from Auburn basketball, right? KD Johnson, fuck, he's been playing basketball since Vietnam, but somehow he's got a sixth COVID year. But no, you would be trying to figure out because you'd have academic advisors like talking to you, kind of like, hey, I need to get these guys registered for classes in the summer. Like, it's kind of like, hey, can you get with the coaches to see? And you try to talk to the coaches, and, you're dealing with, I guess, 10 assistants, 10 full, because you go to the assistants first. So you're dealing with 10 different personalities here. And like we talked about a little bit, some are more loyal to their players and whatnot. Some believe in their players a little bit more, like, hey, I can get a little bit out of him. And they just never wanted to have those conversations with their players. I feel like sometimes that's where we failed as college staffs. But like to answer your initial question, just want to preface it with that. I think we did a pretty good job projecting that. You could always tell by talking to, there's so many people in our building, as y'all know, like strength coaches were great to talk to. The training room are great to talk to because those kids would get, they get a little bit more open in that. It's like you'll hear three or four full-time trainers like, oh yeah, he was getting in here for treatment this morning, and he was telling Johnny over there, like, yeah, I've already had X, Y, and Z reach out to me about him in their portal. I don't know. It's like, well, he's banged up. And, the trainers are like, I mean, he's good to go. He just keeps telling me he's hurt. He don't want to practice. So you can tell he's kind of saving himself. And then the strength coaches are like, yeah, you can tell, dude. He's kind of checked out. It wouldn't surprise me. And then the classic example, after four games played, if they go to their coach and say, I want to use my red shirt, the kid is like, I don't want to practice anymore. I just want to sit in here. And then my favorite, the dumbest thing you could do would be enter the portal during the season, but yet it still happens. I don't know why, because they can immediately cut your aid and you don't get to go to the workouts anymore. At least stay there and develop for the fall. At least get stronger, build your body up a little bit. But I feel like we hit pretty well in a lot of them. But then at a school like Matt Lee, a school like UCF, at Matt Lee, a center, really went to Hagerty High School. He was the one that kind of always comes to mind. Grew up a massive UCF fan. His parents were UCF fans, went to high school across the street at Hagerty, left his senior year to go to Miami, which, like, we were all – I mean, Herb Hand was always like, there's no way Matt Lee wouldn't leave Alabama to go to leave UCF. Like, die hard UCF guy. Parents are big people. And they, dude, his senior year in Miami just offered him a ton of money. They needed a starting center who had 3 starting years experience. I mean, he left. So, like, to me, I'm always like, man, that kid was like decked out in UCF. And granted, it's UCF, a younger fan base, but still, that was one that always took me back. A guy like that was surprising. But usually, I think he'd hit on like 90-95% of them. Between just talking to the academic support staff, strength and conditioning staff, training staff, just overall support staff, you could tell they were close to somebody who they would talk to about it, because they're not just going to internalize all that to nobody. So, like, their tutor or the attractive, like I said, the attractive academic advisor, they'd be a little bit more open to and stuff like that than they would their actual coach. So you'd find out at some point. Rare surprises, I'd feel like, at least if you have your finger or your thumb on them, probably like you should at least have some pulse of your players.
Do you think there was, I mean, it seems odd that a player like, I mean, we're talking about an offensive lineman that, which are a little bit more stable, a little more grounded, a guy that was loyal to UCF. I mean, Dave, was there some funny business? I mean, did he have an idea what was coming his way if he decided to, travel south and go join the Hurricanes?
Yeah, I would say Miami was up front with him. And again, UCF is such a new school. I mean, they're trying to get the collective going. I remember we'd always said the average age of their alum is 35, I think I remember. And wow. As you all know, there's not many 35-year-olds out there that have a ton of money to go give to their school to pay to keep kids there. I mean, it's just the school started in 1965. So they're a little handcuffed, still are. So, yeah, Miami could pay them more. And I think the kid was just kind of like – and maybe UCF didn't count. I wasn't there then, but maybe UCF didn't counter enough with, like, maybe to his liking, kind of like, dang, you don't see enough. And that starts, you know, I mean, we're all humans, that you start to take that a little personal, where it's like, dang, I started 3 years here and that's all you think of me. Mm-hmm. All right. And y'all have heard stories. Some of these guys, perfect example. We're talking about offensive linemen who've started for 2 or 3 years at a school, have been big contributors, and they see the guy that's coming in and hasn't proven anything's getting the guaranteed money. That doesn't sit well for some of those guys in that locker room, yeah. Especially the non-flashy, not real marketable offensive lineman, the center, the guard that the fans don't really think about, just old number 67 out there who's played a lot of snaps for you, been beat to hell, and he sees the big receiver running back coming in getting $800,000, and he's like, man, I've started 3 years here. You tell me I can't get anything, or all y'all can give me is my simple 25K.
Yeah.
You think, are there any players that are on the flip side of the end, a 3-year start at UCF, and he's making that decision, trying to make that decision, and he sees maybe he gets an NFL evaluation that says, man, it's going to be tough to make it to the NFL. So this is the one chance I'm going to have to get paid. Do you think any guys are given in that much forethought into the future that, hey, this is my one payday?
I think it'd be dumb if you didn't. I mean, it sounds like, hell, you'd be great advice for some of these guys. Like, because again, like all these deals, you have all these guys that think they're going to the NFL, but they need better advice. Like, hey, man, you may not just make a living where you don't have to go have another job outside of playing football. That's reality for you. It's for 99% of these dudes. But for whatever reason, they're getting bad advice from a trainer or uncle, some distant family member. I don't know, somebody, maybe an immediate family member. But that'd be great advice right there. Like, hey, man, you may want to, in today's world, college athletes have never had as much leverage as they have now. You may want to kind of go collect your check. It'll set you real nice for your first couple of years outside of getting into the real world, man. Like, you may want to go take that. You may be able to go buy your engagement ring for your girlfriend off that, dude. I mean, it may not be a lot, but it's saving you something where you're not having to pay a loan. And I don't think sometimes they're as forward thinking, but again, I mean, we were all 18 to 21 years old before. We don't make the best decisions. And sometimes you have the wrong people influence, but I think that would be a great decision. And then probably, I'm sure Miami was in his ear a little bit about Alex Mirabal, really good developmental offensive line coach. Right. Your head coach is an offensive line guy. Like, mm-hmm. I'm sure selling that a little bit got in there. I mean, Cristobal can show all the guys he produced in Alabama, all through Oregon, and now Miami. So that helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So you've talked about how you feel like y'all were generally successful in predicting who's going to enter and what have you. What about the players that you brought in? How successful were you with your evaluations of them? You know, did they usually measure up to what you thought they'd be, or were there times you're like, oh my gosh, we thought this kid was a completely different kid than what he's turned out to be?
On the players, like just on the pure football side, just them as a player between the 100 yards, I don't really think we missed. We missed, like I think I talked about a little bit earlier, like you do with some high school kids. We missed with like the character development stuff. Like it's like, dude, if I'm having to call this guy to get like, hey man, tomorrow's the deadline to get you in for mid-year. You're transferring from Auburn. We need to get you in, man. Like I gotta get on and like walk you through the application process and hold your hand. You can't go get on an online Zoom because you woke up too late, stuff like that. Sometimes, I mean, these kids will tell you who they are. It's just sometimes I feel like, and it's not really usually the support staff member or coach, I mean, or personnel guy. It's usually the coach doesn't want to see it because he's so blinded by his own room at times. I feel like, and I feel like y'all know what I'm talking about. It's like that guy's so blinded, like, hey, I need help. I need a guy can run. I need some kind of product. This guy's back in high school, ran a 4.4. It's like, well, coach, he played like 30 snaps last year. He barely played. Like he didn't play any at Notre Dame. And it's just like, yeah, but he says this is why he didn't. He said he was getting screwed. So, well, that's his end of the story. If we called anybody at Notre Dame, I mean, we have over 100 staff members in here. Someone it works for us has to know someone it works at Notre Dame where we could get these answers. But we would never go – like, it feels like us support staff members would be willing to go do that. But the coaches didn't for whatever reason. I don't know. I think it was just the immediate gratification and just were kind of blinded by their own position group and just wanted to sign a kid. And again, it all starts with the head coach who, I mean, the head coach is kind of just wanting to get the big flash name and be in the news for 24/7. For a day instead of the 364 days. It is, I just feel like we in the portal, in my experience, I don't think we missed on the football player, like the kid, the actual athletic ability and stuff like that. I think we missed on the actual character evaluation and how much a kid actually loves football and is like willing to go learn and adapt and stuff like that. And I feel like that's where a lot of people miss, especially at the high level. Because y'all know, I mean, if they're getting recruited by Tennessee, Florida, Alabama, LSU, I mean, they got to be somewhat good football. I mean, just initially good. But I think in the college level, we do such a poor job universally of evaluating the kid. His character is off the field stuff. Like, does he fit what we want to do? Can we be honest with ourselves here? Can we go like, and I get it. It's tough to say, but imagine Brian Kelly sitting there. They're about to turn down the number one kid in the state of Louisiana. How much flack they would get back for this. But Brian Kelly go around, ask his staff room, hey guys, do we really think this guy is going to fit in and be a kind of guy we want in our program? Or do we think we're just signing this guy just to go win signing day? But we're going to have to go deal with this crap the other 364 days. Is it worth that? And I don't think a lot of coaches are really, because a lot of, I mean, y'all know, for a lot of these SEC big time coaches, signing day is almost another game. Like these fans want to be like, well, I want my team in the top five, top 10. Like it's kind of something they can brag about. And like perception's reality, unfortunately. But a lot of those coaches get caught up into that because you got ADs and stuff being like, hey, man, why did we finish outside the top 10? Well, yeah, coach, you know, that number one player in Louisiana, you know, he was a freak athlete and stuff. He would have moved us up the 247 on three rankings. But you know what? Like, he just, his character and stuff didn't check out. Like, we called his high school, talked to his high school coach, talked to some opponents. They thought he was kind of a bad kid. So we didn't think he was a fit. That AD didn't understand that. He's like, well, my biggest donor's pissed off. We didn't sign the guy. So, like, why aren't we ranked in the top five? So, to be fair, I, as the personnel guy, didn't have to have those conversations. The head coach did. But I do think those coaches get caught up a little bit into what the signing class rankings are. Whether they would admit that publicly or not, they all keep up with it outside of probably like Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, just because they probably are smart enough to know they finished in the top three every year or whatever it was. But I did, James, a long-winded question there, Neil, long-winded answer for you there, Neil. But I do think, not really player-wise, but I think we did miss, and I think not only us, a lot of teams in the country miss on the character side of things, just overall character side of things.
Now, Dave, were you more likely to miss on the character with a high school kid coming in or with a kid coming in from the portal?
Naturally, probably because the situation and the recruitment happens faster, probably the portal kid, because you don't have near as long to develop that relationship, and it's just a shorter, like, hey, man, get on the call. You interested with us? All right, come visit this week. This kid's taking two or three visits in a week, then he's going to make a determination. So the whole process is what, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks where he decides where he's going. So that kid could probably put on a little bit more of a front in that situation, where if you're recruiting a kid in high school for 2 or 3 years, I mean, if you're going to the high school there, you're talking to the kid, the coaches, people around him, you should be able to gauge what kind of, like, by that point, unless you just, again, like, hey, I want to sign a five-star, or I'm a position coach, kind of to show that I can recruit a high-level kid. I'm going to turn my eye to it. And the problem, too, is a lot of these position coaches aren't here to deal with it for 4 years. You know, I mean, the kids leave a lot, but also the coaches are leaving a lot, too. So it's one of those things that, like, that coaches, I mean, if coaches there 3 or 4 years at a school, that's a long time now. As y'all remember, it's 15, 20 years ago, a lot of these guys stayed together for a while. So the chances of that kid signing and getting coached by the guy who signed him at his position for all 4 or 5 years, or the kid staying all 4 to 5 years, the combination of both of that staying almost slim to none.
NFL staffs, again, they have full-time scouting staffs that are doing that character work. Again, 1, 2, 3 years in advance. I mean, the minimum you're going to have is a fall and a spring on a guy character-wise. And again, maybe in some rare cases, you know, junior declares and surprises, you're going to have 4 or 5 months of character on him. What are or what should be college staffs, should they be doing to, again, if the portal's not going away to a certain degree. So, again, to avoid the issues of, again, missing on the character, what should college staffs be doing to, again, bring more people in, bring scouts in to get that character stuff right?
Yeah, I mean, again, the problem is you're recruiting, which is the difference. That's the bad. Some of these kids would get so rubbed wrong, or their parents would get so right. Like, if you tried to, like, there was one school I heard that tried to start doing psychological tests on kids, like, kind of bring, like, on an OV, and it turned a lot of kids and stuff off. So, like, that's your hurdle. But again, I feel like if you accepted that as a staff, if the head coach set that standard, like, hey, our support staff here, they're going to call around. Just to give everybody a heads up. So if somebody from another staff calls saying, hey, they had somebody asking around, just a heads up, we're on the same page here, guys. And we may lose some guys because of this. Like, we may lose some guys that may be turned off that we're trying to go look into their background. But at the end of the day, if you don't want us looking at you, what are you hiding? So at the end of the day, this may save us on the back end. Front end, we may miss on some kids, and it may not be good from a media perception standpoint. But in reality, we know internally we're turning down these kids, and we have to be okay with that. I think a lot of college staffs aren't okay with dealing with that backlash from a media perception fan standpoint, because a lot of people don't understand it. It's like, well, I don't give a crap if he's a problem for y'all Monday through Friday. If he's great on my Saturday TV, he's like, y'all, that's y'all stuff to deal with. And like Jimbo Fisher used to say, he's like, the scale would slide a lot. He's like, I mean, obviously, if you're producing a lot for me on Saturday, I'm more willing to put up with your crap Sunday through Friday. I mean, I think that's throughout some kind of all industries a little bit. I mean, if you're producing, I mean, to a certain extent, if you're producing in your work world, people are probably willing to deal with your crap a little bit more if you're producing at a high level. But yeah, I mean, I think you'd have to assign scouts. I mean, even I think some of these coaches, just because, like, I think a coach would talk to another coach a little bit differently than he would Johnny Joe, who's worked in the Tennessee recruiting department, if you're calling on behalf. You know what I mean? I think they'll be a little bit more front. So your coaches would have to have full buy-in, being like, hey, man, I want honest feedback. Don't come give me Johnny Joe's a great character kid, and then he gets on our campus and he's arrested for getting pulled over for a DUI or possession of a gun. And I'm going to look down that staff table and be like, there's no way this just happened. Like this, like you could have been not saying you could have prevented it completely, but like, let's just don't have any surprises. I mean, I remember me and this, some of the sports staff members would always laugh, and there'd be some kid that was always like an issue with missing classes when we'd have academic meetings, and the academic staff would come in once a week and meet with them. And just the coaches sometimes would just be baffled. They're like, yeah, he's just not going to class. It's like, dude, it was a photo shoot finish to get this guy eligible. We're shocked that this guy's struggling in school. Like, you know what I mean? It sometimes the stuff like that is like, his coach said he refused to practice his senior year and would just kind of show up to game days. So we're shocked this kid's kind of not wanting to practice very much. And the trainer's telling us, hey, like, everything checked out on our end from a structural. He can't hurt it anymore. It's just a pain tolerance. He should be fine, but he's telling us he's not. It's like, we knew that from when we recruited him. He was kind of a little bit of a diva. Like, are we shocked he's doing that here now? I think sometimes we just turn the blinders, the coaches and some of the support staff members at times.
And I think, like you said, it goes back to the top. Again, there's NFL teams that it's very obvious. They know how to deal with those guys. They know how to deal with the headaches. They know how to keep them on the field. They know how to keep them out of serious trouble. Again, goes down to, again, some of the guys that, some of the greats at the college level. Again, he referenced Jimbo. Nick Saban was always willing to do that. Again, who could kind of guide those guys along. There's some programs and NFL teams that are not cut out. Again, in Atlanta, again, no matter how much we tried to convince ourselves, I think, in different situations that, oh, yeah, we can deal with the off-field stuff that this guy's bringing. Again, there's some teams, staffs, departments, schools, whatever, that aren't set up to deal with those issues. And again, if you bring a guy like that in, and you know, you're gonna have to deal with them one way or another.
No,
Dave, you gotta have some kind of time. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut
no,
you
you're
off.
Fine. No, I was just saying, yeah, you gotta have some kind of plan when they come in, like you said, knowing they're coming in if they're a problem kid coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Dave, do you remember a time when a kid was a perfect fit from what you needed position wise, talent wise, he's coming from the right school, maybe even perfect for your scheme, but the character was such a black mark that you didn't take the kid?
Yeah, I might say there was a kid that ended up signing with Texas when I was at A&M. There was a big time prospect. Talked about, he was literally what we were just talking about, big 6'7", probably, he's probably around 280, 290. Could have grown into his frame, though. Had long arms. But it just never clicked for the kid from talking to the offensive line coach. It was at Texas at that time afterwards. And like, dude, he was shocked I could remember that kid. Because to him, he's like, you remember that kid? I was like, yeah. He's like, dude, that's one of the biggest, like, complete, like, misses by anybody ever. He's like, yeah. He's like, and I coached him for 2 years. He's like, he just had no he's like, just couldn't get right. He's like, I need to check in on that kid. He's like, kind of triggered. So that, yeah, it wasn't a character. The kid was just so immature. And then sometimes you forget, maybe it's not even a character thing. Some of these guys go to these big time colleges and just overwhelmed. Like, it's just like almost like too much for them. It's just like, wow, like the expectation, or man, everybody's good here. It's not, I'm not the best kid by far. It's like, man, I got the kid, it's the best player on our team. He goes in and lifts weights after practice. Like, this kid's like, damn, I didn't have to do that. So sometimes I think it's overwhelming to some of these kids. Mm-hmm. The big step up it is from this high school level, or even from some college levels as well. But yeah, I would say the one kid that probably ended up going to Texas, big offensive lineman, was probably one that you're probably like, man, like, baffling. This kid didn't make it from somewhere because he had all the physical attributes.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. I guess I'm wondering how much character really bears on things for a kid who's coming into the portal, especially if he's got a year left. I mean, you could stay on your head for a certain amount of time. You know, you can put up with bad character if the kid is perfect for 1 year, you know. But if it's a kid you're bringing in from high school, then and you're going to have him for a little longer, maybe there's a bigger commitment, then you're going to want better character. Of course, I guess the other side of it, that is, a kid coming from high school maybe is a little bit more malleable. I mean, maybe he can be developed into being, maybe the kid grows up a little bit and becomes a little more mature. I don't know. I guess, again, never having worked in a recruiting office, I never have had that experience. So I guess it's harder for me to make an observation there.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's just, yeah, overall, just maybe that would probably be the, I can't think of anybody just from a straight character standpoint that I was a little surprised by. Usually, I feel like you usually knew, like, usually it's like, man, no, shocking, this kid. Yeah, I think you're not surprised. I mean, y'all see it sometimes in the news and stuff. You'll see some kid get kicked off and you'll go hit up somebody from that organization. They're like, not shocking.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, Dave, do you think, let's, in 10 years, let's say, looking forward, do you think the best person that's going to be in your personnel department or your scouting recruiting department, whatever, who's working for a college football team, he's going to be the guy who's most fluent with the portal, or he's going to be the guy with the best eye for talent?
It's funny. Me and my buddies talk about this stuff. I think if you polled every coach in the country and asked them to give you a description of what, like, their head of recruiting department does or what he should do, you'd get 100 different answers if you polled 100 different coaches. But if we got uniformed, I mean, I think you got to have somebody, the guy at the top, I think you got to have hand in hand a guy that's an eye for talent guy, but that's really probably all he's doing. Because right now you got a lot of guys who try to do that, but then they're also handling transcripts, official visits, stuff like that. So you're wearing a lot of different hats. You can't really lock it. But also, I mean, if we go to this, how we talked about earlier, the salary cap, you got to have somebody who's familiar with how to do that. And I think that's where it wouldn't shock me if they go hire at some point, they get a little bit of this money and it's a salary cap, right? They go hire some of these NFL guys. It may not be, I mean, I don't think a number one, obviously number two, probably in the NFL. Y'all tell me he's leaving to come be a head guy, even at Alabama. But if they have some 3 to 4 year guy that's been in the organization, younger cat that has been around, a salary cap mindset. Because again, people like me, I've never worked with a salary cap. All my buddies who've only worked in college, we've never worked with a true salary cap. So I don't know if I would, and this is me humbly saying this, I don't know if I would just necessarily turn that rein over to me either. I mean, I haven't, just being honest here, I've never dealt with salary cap. A guy who may be pretty good for the job, maybe some guys like, you know what, I'm going to try this college thing out. I've been in the NFL 4 years. Like I might, a number one, maybe I'm a coordinator of scouting or whoever's been around a salary cap kind of internally in-house guy. Maybe I'll go try it at this college level and see if somebody maybe from the college level takes a chance on hiring somebody to come down and work at the college level that has experience with salary cap.
Dave, what's having been someone who's worked in college football extensively and then got out voluntarily, what's would you say is the shelf life of someone in your shoes these days? I mean, is it getting smaller? Is it getting shorter? Is the burnout factor getting higher, would you say?
It'll be interesting to see how that the role, it seems like the new role coming about is GM, but every general manager is kind of different at every school. You go look at some of these staff directories, and I do a decent bit just because of my day job with us trying to sell our product to these colleges. It's just like, all right, a general manager, but then they have an associate AD that's a general manager, right? It's like, all right, well, who's who? Like, there's you can't have too many cooks in the kitchen. And sometimes I feel like that's an issue at some of these schools. It just depends how that role grows. If it just continues to maybe at some schools be like they do some, a paper pusher job, and some of these guys aren't really feeling like their opinions are being valued. And then maybe some of these, like I mentioned, some of these guys, some of these colleges start hiring some NFL guys to handle salary cap of once if we get to that level. Maybe you don't want to be that mid-40-year-old guy that's dealing with a bunch of high school guys all the time. But that's not where I was, but I could totally see that. If you have kids, you're missing family events because you're dealing with a 7-on-7 team in the summer, saying they're going to be at your place at 6 p.m. for a facility tour, but they're 2 hours late, don't get there till 8, and I'm missing putting my kid to bed. Yeah, right. That kind of starts to bother people. So right. I feel like dealing with that, it just depends how much these roles grow. And I don't think anybody can really 100% say which way it's going to go just because we don't know the way the sport's going to go here in the next year or two.
Yeah. Boy, it is a really volatile situation. That's for sure.
What is, again, with all the meetings, all the changes, again, you referenced the SEC, Big Ten getting together. How different does college football look in a year or two?
Well, shoot, we've already seen it. Why them just expanding the playoff? I mean, in a year or two, I mean, I think within the next 2 years, they announce there's going to be a separation of the have and have nots, and it's probably going to be anywhere from 60 to 70 teams that go kind of do their own thing, at least from football. I mean, again, I think y'all would agree, football is such its own entity compared to all the collegiate sports that it's got to separate and just do its own thing. It's just so much different than all the other sports. But I think in 2 years, we at least have an announcement. I mean, we kind of already have the SEC and Big Ten, at least with their percentage of what they're getting for the playoffs compared to the Big 12 and ACC. You already see Clemson, Florida State trying to get out. It just kind of seems like there's a writing on the wall. So it wouldn't shock me in the next 2 years if we see that get done. I mean, we saw how fast they made schedules up during the COVID year. I mean, I can imagine you could come up with some kind of league here within a year period of officially announcing it.
Yeah. Again, we're going to have college players under contract. Again, you see stuff again with Old Dominion basketball, or again, you've seen the different little signs that it's coming. Again, you talk about these super conferences. Again, schedules are getting aligned. Quick one. Does Notre Dame, are they going to have to join a conference here at some point?
Man, I feel like I'd have to really look at their numbers and stuff, but it feels like they have so much leverage just from what they get on these TV deals with NBC and stuff like that. Is the ball kind of in their court? I mean, at some point, I think so. They're going to have to jump in on one side. I mean, I guess geographically, they fit more in the Big Ten, obviously. But again, at that point, I think it'll be one big conference. I think at some point they move that way, but I could see it being a little bit of hesitancy on their side of bringing that over, if that makes sense.
They like to do their thing, and they've been able to get away with it. And again, until they are forced, which I'm on the table where I think, again, it's going to get too complicated. And again, when everybody else is like, all right, see, you know, peace Notre Dame, you know, then again, the leverage can only last so
long.
Gonna
have to be, hold up, guys, hold up.
Yeah. Yeah, the train's leaving without you. So, Dave, you mentioned the SEC podcast. Where is that at? Where can people find it? Where can people find you?
Yeah, you can follow me at Mach10Sports is my Twitter handle. Also got an Instagram again at Mach10Sports, on Facebook if you're on that. And then I also do content for the SEC Unfiltered platform. That's on YouTube. Also Mach10's on YouTube too. But SEC Unfiltered on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook as well. We do all things SEC football, basketball, and baseball. So you can check out any of my stuff like that as well on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. SEC, the cradle of football, but again, they have to get back on the horse and overtake the Big Ten as national champions, you know, once again. But anybody that wants to argue that the consistently best football is played in the SEC, so, you know, we'll leave it there. Plenty of good prospects all across the country, but without a doubt, the college landscape is changing. Again, for anybody out there that's listening, what is your school doing? What should they be doing? Let us know. Again, you said at Mach10Sports.
Yeah, at Mach10Sports.
On Twitter. Of course, Neil is at Inside the League. I'm at RightStepADV. Again, find us, comment on us, follow us. Again, make sure you check out everything we're doing. Dave, really appreciating some really good, unique, fun insight.
Appreciate you having me, guys. I get on anytime, listen to y'all's stuff all the time. Y'all have great insight, guys that really have true knowledge of the NFL side of things and just all things personnel. But again, I appreciate y'all having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. We like to think we know a thing or two, but our guests carry us without question. So that's always nice. They have to ice up their backs when we get done. But we're almost April, NFL draft time. Again, it's crazy. I'm already getting hit with 2025 draft requests as, you know, the world keeps on turning, transfer portal opening up here in April. So again, no matter where you're at, what you're doing, don't just keep watching football, but keep scouting.